listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Happy Indigenous Peoples Day. Yeah, you know, Christopher Columbus was a murderous broker in the child sex trade. That was his principal claim to fame, according to Miguel Sueno, his second in command, to whom he gave a 13-year-old girl as a gift. And then Sueno bragged about raping her. Today's Columbus Day. I think you know, in Seattle has said no. Not Columbus Day anymore. It's Indigenous Peoples Day. I'm down with that. I think that that's great. Meanwhile, there is an incredible new TV ad where you hear all these Republicans say, cut, 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 cut. And the net-net is, you know, what the director of the National Institutes of Health, Dr. Francis Collins, pointed out, that he said NIH has been working on Ebola vaccine since 2001. It's not like we suddenly woke up and thought, oh, my gosh, we should have something ready here. Frankly, if we had not gone through our 10-year slide in research support, what he's referring to are Republican budget cuts, we probably would have had a vaccine in time for this that would have gone through clinical trials and would be ready. Here's the ad that is running in many of the competitive states around the country, linking Republicans to Ebola.
Washington actually can cut spending.
The CDC says its discretionary funding has been cut by $585 million since 2010.
Cut. Less government.
Cut.
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 Our budget has been flat since 2003. Responding to an emerging infectious disease threat, this is particularly damaging.
Cut. Cut.
That was the left hook.
Cut. Cut. Cut.
The right cross was the sequestration.
Cut. Cut.
The NIH saw its budget slashed by $446
million.
Cut.
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 There are outbreaks happening today that we're not able to recognize, stop, or prevent as effectively as we should be able to.
Cut.
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 Make a cut.
Right. Republican cuts kill, is what it says at the end, and then encourages people to vote. So, on the line with us, our old friend Neil McCabe, conservative commentator, editor of the Guns and Patriots newsletter, gunsandpatriots.com. Neil, welcome back to the program.
Well, happy Columbus Day, Tom, and maybe I'm betraying my age, but I remember when it was really a big deal.
Oh, yeah, back when we basically wrote people of color and indigenous people out of our history. I remember that well, too.
Well, we also celebrated that the native peoples were brought the good news of our Lord Jesus Christ, and that Europe was connected to this amazing continent. And look what the Europeans have done. They've built this thing up into such a place that I'm talking to you now.
That's an interesting take, Neil. It's a very interesting take. Here's what Sueno wrote. He was Columbus's right-hand man, Miguel Sueno. He quote, "When our caravels were about to leave for Spain, we gathered 1,600 male and female persons of those Indians, and these we embarked in our caravels on February 17, 1495. For those Spaniards who remained, we let it be known in the vicinity that anyone who wanted to take some of these slaves could do so to the amount desired, which was done." Sueno says, "I took a beautiful teenage Carib girl as a personal slave, a gift from Columbus, but when he attempted to have sex with her, quote, she resisted with all her strength. So, quote, I thrashed her mercilessly and raped her," end quote. Columbus wrote a letter to the Spanish monarch in 1493 saying, "It is possible in the name of the Holy Trinity to sell all the slaves which it is possible to sell. Here there are so many of these slaves, and also Brazilwood, that although they are living things, they are as good as gold." And he went on to say, 100 castellanos, a Spanish coin, are easily obtained for a woman as for a farm. And it is very general, and there are plenty of dealers who go about looking for the girls. Those from 9 to 10 years old are now the greatest in demand. End of quote from Christopher Columbus. The Taino, by the way, the Native Americans that you say he brought Jesus Christ to, all of them were dead within 40 years on that island.
Well, we know that first contact, we know, you know, is a terrible thing to indigenous people who haven't been, can, you know, when when the cultures clash and the germs and the infections. And,
well, here's what Pedro de Cordeba.
Well, we know, Tom, that we know that some like National Geographic had to stop discovering new people because half of them would be dead within 3 years.
Yeah.
Remember, you know, they would keep discovering these people in the Amazon and things, and it was really murder.
Yeah, influenza is pretty rough stuff. This is 1517, so we're like about 20 years on. This is Pedro de Cordoba, who was part of one of the later visits back there. He said the Taino Columbus sought to impose discipline on them for even a minor offense, an Indian's nose or ear was cut off so he could be sent back to his village to impress the people. Columbus attacked them with dogs, skewered them with pikes from anus to mouth, and shot them. Eventually, and I'm quoting verbatim here from Pedro de Cordoba, 1517, a letter to King Ferdinand, quote, as a result of the sufferings and hard labor they have endured, the Indians choose and have chosen suicide. Occasionally, 100 have committed mass suicide. The women, exhausted by labor, have shunned conception and childbirth. Many, when pregnant, have taken something to abort and have aborted. Others, after delivery, have killed their children with their own hands so as not to leave them to such oppressive slavery. This guy was a priest. He was horrified by what was going on.
Well, listen, Tom, mistakes were made, but the bottom line is that this guy was an amazing explorer. He challenged the preconceptions.
He was lost. He was lost.
He connected Europe.
But I'm more interested in knowing, Neil, how you're going to defend Republicans who are, you know, making sure that, Ebola is a real problem here.
I mean,
10 years of Republican budget cuts, and the NIH says we could have had a vaccine if it wasn't for Mitch McConnell.
I do not think that the Republicans wanted to bring Ebola to the United States. And I don't think that we're short. How much money are we not spending? How many billions are we spending on medical research that all of a sudden we don't have the money to research Ebola?
It's been cut more than 400. The cuts between the CDC and the NIH are almost $1 billion.
How many studies of butterflies do you think we've done in the last 10 years that could have been done on Ebola?
I don't know, but I can tell you that the Ebola vaccine got dialed back as a result of Republican budget cuts and sequestration. I can tell you that as a fact. The head of the NIH said it in sworn testimony before Congress last week.
The Obama administration official said that it wasn't his fault, it was the Republicans' fault. And he swore to that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm shocked. I mean, don't you think this is kind of shallow?
No, I don't. I think that Republicans don't understand the difference between expenses and investments.
So the President of the United States, who makes everything else a priority, right, who blows off the law, who blows off budgets, who does really whatever he wants.
I would disagree entirely with that characterization.
All right. Well, let's just say that Obama has a very robust opinion of executive authority. And yet he didn't.
No, not so much. He has not been able, for example, to figure out where to get money from to get people out of Guantanamo that George Bush said shouldn't be there and haven't committed any crimes.
Well, I mean,
he can't just fund Ebola research.
Well,
it's Congress does that.
The five of the thousands of people who passed through Guantanamo, the five people that everyone agreed belonged there, he gave away to Bergdahl. So, I mean, don't talk about Gitmo. But getting back to Ebola.
I'd be glad to talk about Gitmo. You've got 70 or 80 people there right now who were found by the Bush administration to be free of any crime.
But, Tom, if they're dangerous, we know they're radicalized. If they're dangerous to America, they have to stay there.
So we damaged them, therefore we have to punish them.
It's sad, but, I mean, how many Americans are you going to endanger because of this principle of fairness?
I'm not that scared, Neil. I don't sit around trembling, worrying about this.
Well, maybe a lot of people weren't afraid of Ebola a month ago because the president said everything.
I'm not so scared about Ebola either. Hang
really?
On.
Yeah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeah, at least we've got a public health system in this country. Neil McCabe, gunsandpatriots.com. Neil, thank you for dropping by.
Always a pleasure, Tom. Be good.
Talking. Thank you. And welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
I've been listening to you for years, and every Columbus Day you beat up on Columbus.
Yep.
The guy was living
proudly
500 years ago, according to the standards of 500 years ago. Slavery was normal. people in Europe, white Europeans, were selling their children into basic slavery. They'd sell them to shoemakers and whatnot to go be a shoemaker's apprentice.
There's a big difference between being a shoemaker's apprentice and having one of your parents skewered from anus to mouth on a sharpened pole.
Parents in Europe were selling their girls into sex slavery in Europe. There was nothing unusual about
it. Yeah, the European civilization was, to a large extent, you're right, brutal. In fact, Thomas Hobbes probably described it well, although he got the cause wrong. But that's no justification for it, Ed.
We're talking about almost the time of Genghis Khan, for crying out loud. Brutality and violence was the normal standard. It was business as usual.
And therefore we should celebrate it?
Therefore, we shouldn't hold him up to modern standards. He was performing according to the standards of the time in quite a normal manner.
Therefore, we should celebrate it?
He was an explorer in the 1500s. Behaving as an explorer in the 1500s was wont to.
And therefore, we should celebrate it?
Why not?
Because it was brutal. That's like celebrating slavery, because that was normal, Ed.
The 1500s were a very brutal time.
So do you think that we should have a national Celebrate Slavery Day?
What, should we forget the Renaissance because it was around that time?
The Renaissance was about 100 years before that. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Why would you want to forget the Renaissance? The Renaissance was a major break with European history. It was a time
During the time of the Renaissance, the Italians over in Italy were selling their children into sex slavery, too. I mean, you can't have one without the other. 1500s are the 1500s. It was a brutal, horrible time. The people that lived in it, you can't judge them by modern standards and go, oh, my God, they were monsters. No, they were just the people of the time.
And therefore we should celebrate them?
Why not?
Because I think that the people that they were monsters to, who history has ignored for 500 years, are worthy of some acknowledgement.
Granted, not everything they did was pleasant, but that was the 1500s.
And the consequence of the 1500s was the destruction of indigenous people, particularly in the Americas. I guarantee you that the upper class and even the middle class of Europe were not selling their children into sex slavery. And they did live nice, long lives, by and large.
Not so long. Maybe they died when they were 45 instead of dying when they were 30.
No, there were plenty of people who lived to 60, 70, 80, 90 years old. It was not all that unusual. The major thing that skews average age was childhood infant mortality, not people dying when they're 30. Those are averages. But again, I don't understand why we should celebrate a horrible time in history.
Now, that's it. It's a horrible time in history, perhaps, but it's not a horrible man. It's just a man in history in a horrible time.
I think he was a horrible man. Respectfully, Ed, I think he was a horrible man. We'll be back. But it's, you know, it's sort of like, you know, what kind of mentality does it take to become... I'm not going to film that. We'll leave it at that. 20 minutes past the episode. Am I being totally politically too correct to say Columbus was a murderous thug who was involved in the sex trade and the slave trade and all, and therefore it's kind of dumb for us to celebrate it? Or is this, you know, see, my take on this is, frankly, this is an entirely Eurocentric holiday and an entirely Eurocentric worldview. White Europeans saying, we enslaved these people and those people and these people over here, and get over it. Well, you know, a lot of indigenous people are not ready to get over it. In fact, a lot of indigenous people didn't survive it. And I think that, you know, we should be seriously talking about that. In fact, let me tie this back to our rant from last week about homeland. You will remember from our conversation that when Rudolf Hess and Adolf Hitler, Hess helped Hitler write Mein Kampf, by the way, when Hitler was recovering from his wounds from World War I, Hess was his buddy. And while Hitler was in jail for a while, Hess was his buddy, and he helped him write Mein Kampf. And they had been vigorous students in the 1920s of the Zionist movement, the Jewish movement to have a Jewish homeland in the Middle East. And the Zionist movement used the word homeland. You know, our people genetically, our people religiously, our people ancestrally, there's a homeland. So the question in my mind, going back to the word homeland and tying this into kind of Indigenous Peoples Day, is would a person of color have come up with the word homeland to describe the Department of Homeland Security? You know, keep in mind, when Hitler was using, when he introduced in 1934 in the Nuremberg rally, when Rudolf Hess introduced Adolf Hitler and said, Danke, Herr Führer, thanks to the Führer, I forget the next line, and then he says, Heimat zu sehen, we have a Heimat is the German word for homeland, a homeland here, Heimat zu sehen für alles die Deutsche in die ganze Welt, as I recall, all of the Germans in the entire world. In fact, here it is. Here's Rudolf Hess.
Dank Ihrer Führung wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen, Heimat zu sein. Heimat zu sein für alle Deutschen der Welt.
So keep in mind, he was saying, we are creating a homeland for all the Germans in the world. And the slogan that the Germans used was Blut und Erde, blood and earth. In other words, the German blood, this Germanic blood, flows through us, and it is tied to this soil, this Germany, on which we have lived for hundreds or thousands of years, or tens of thousands of years, depending on your mythology. So a homeland is a place where a people came from, historically. Now, I can understand a Native American calling North America, or at least that part of North America that the United States occupies, a homeland. Here's the Apache homeland. Here's the Iroquois homeland. That makes perfect sense. But the rest of us, the Caucasians who came here as invaders, the African Americans who were brought here as slaves, people of other ethnicities who came from all over the world, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes involuntarily, is it appropriate that we be calling this homeland? Or is homeland just a word for white people? I mean, I was over the weekend, Melissa Harris-Perry had a particularly poignant show this weekend on MSNBC, or at least Sunday. I didn't see her Saturday show, but I was on an airplane flying back from Vegas all day Saturday. But Sunday she had a particularly poignant show, in which she played a whole bunch of clips from these, you know, now pretty much everybody has a smartphone. And smartphones have movie cameras in them. So what was happening in a big way in the 1900s, in the 1700s, the 1800s, the 1900s, throughout the 20th century, the 1920s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, I guarantee you, Black people got stopped by cops and got the crap beat out of them and got put in jail and got intimidated and got threatened over and over and over every single day, all the time, all over the United States. It's just that the Black people who were being intimidated, or the people of color, I mean, this applies to Hispanics as well, in large part, they didn't have a video camera with them. Now they do. Now we're seeing it every week. It's a brand new outrage. Do the folks, if you're a person who has been pulled over simply because you look different than the police officer and the authority of the state is being used to smash in your window and tase you because you didn't produce your papers fast enough, do you feel like this is your homeland? I'd have a real problem with that. So anyway, not to mention the fact that Columbus, you know, as far as I know, never made it to continental North America. He only made it to the island of Hispaniola, which is now the Dominican Republic and Haiti. But what do we do with this? What do we do with this? We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
My suggestion, very simple. Number one, dump the word homeland, period. And number two, let's start calling it Indigenous Peoples Day. Seattle is right. Before they are, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, the place where despair is not an option, where smart people get their news, indeed. Raji, in Jacksonville, Florida. Am I saying that right?
Raji? You said it absolutely right, Tom.
How you doing?
Hey, man, you don't know what a pleasure it is to speak with you. I've been a big fan of yours since the days of Air America.
Well, thank you.
You kind of like stole my thunder a little bit just before the other break there. My point is this. Why do we celebrate a holiday for a person that was never here? Americans were discovered by Americus Vespucci, not by Christopher Columbus. He's the only guy that's close. Like you say, it's Haiti. You know, so why do we celebrate a holiday for a person that was never here?
Yeah, just for the record, Raji, Americo Vespucci was a map maker. And I don't think he ever left Europe. I think he just made the map that Columbus basically gave him all the information for and signed it Amerigo down in the lower right-hand corner, and that's where America came from. You're right. After Columbus, then came the Spaniards going to Central and South America. They took down the Aztec and Mayan civilizations. There were a lot of people, and then the English, the first British colony in Jamestown in 1617, as I recall, is 1607, and it's just, you know, on from there. You're right. Why are we celebrating a guy who was never here? Well said. Raji, thanks a lot for the call. Willie in Clementon, New Jersey. Hey, Willie.
How you doing, Tom?
Good.
Long-time listener, and I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm Hispanic, I'm Puerto Rican, and I can tell you that Christopher Columbus, even though in our national anthem they put him there as the one who found Puerto Rico, you know, discovered Puerto Rico, but what he did, the atrocities that he did to Taino Indians was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And also, he also was a slave trader, which he also brought in the African Americans in there.
Right. Did he ever make it to Puerto Rico? Was that on one of the later trips?
Did. One of the ships didn't make it to Puerto Rico. He landed on Puerto Rican island. You see that?
Huh.
Interesting. That's part of the history. And there's nothing pretty about the history. My mom can tell you that she loathes what the Spaniards did over there.
Yeah.
The way the atrocities, the sickness, the way that you described everything about what the families did to just not have babies and all that. That all is all true. That's part of our history.
Yeah.
I wish people would understand. There's a statue over here built in one of the towns over here in South Jersey. I'm not going to name the town, but they have a statue there, and it's primary Italian town. And they love Christopher Columbus. And I look at that and I shake my head. I says, why do you celebrate a man's legacy that is not filled with positive, but negative?
Yeah.
They hurt so many people. So why would you celebrate such a man?
Yeah. Why not instead look, you know, if you want to find Italians or Europeans to celebrate, I mean, let's look at some of the people who made great discoveries in science or wrote great literature or whatever. I mean, there are some things worthy of celebration.
Yes.
But mass murderers?
I agree with you. I agree with you so wholeheartedly. I mean, I want to celebrate somebody like Muñoz Marín, who gave us an opportunity to become citizens of the United States.
Yeah.
He worked hard for us to become citizens. And a lot of Hispanics in the Caribbean wish they had that right. We're not a state, but at least we're still citizens. We're given that right.
Right.
How can that be fair?
When did that happen, Willie? Do you know?
I believe that was during Roosevelt's administration.
Teddy Roosevelt?
Franklin
Roosevelt. Yeah. During the Great Depression.
Franklin Roosevelt. Huh. Yeah, Franklin Roosevelt. He went during that time. He made sure that we got our rights. He knew that as a nationalist, he was part of the nationalist, but he noticed that we were never going to get our rights to be free.
Yeah,
Puerto Rico is like the eye of the whole Caribbean. They see that's something that'll never change. We are the eye. We're That's why Puerto Rico will never be.
Well, and by keeping it essentially as a protectorate, it's working out very, very well for some very large American companies, particularly pharmaceutical companies who are using
military too.
Yeah, cheap labor, low taxes. I mean, they've got the best of all kinds of worlds. Willie, thanks for the call. I want to get some more callers in here. I appreciate it. Thank you very much for watching the show. Bernadette in Greenville, South Carolina. You're on the air, Bernadette.
Thank you. Thank you so much. In reference to the phone call made earlier by the lady, first of all, we should not celebrate it because I guarantee back in the day, people cared. The word was not out there, though. And the people who could get it out there were threatened, beaten, or taken. And she has to understand this. The women, the men, the children, it doesn't matter. Right across the board, it was brutal.
Yeah.
And why should we celebrate it? Because in today's world, what would we do to a person like that today?
Yeah.
We would go over there, probably, most likely, and take over, right? We would put troops on the ground. We would stop it because of the atrocities of the genocide.
Yeah, Columbus was ISIS.
Slavery.
Columbus was ISIS. We are celebrating a European version of ISIS. Bernadette, brilliant. Thank you very much for the call. Dan in Omaha, Nebraska. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, I've got a little story that, in answer to your guest that came in. I was in a book signing line, and the man in front of me was telling the author that he thought that Howard Zinn's book, his history book, should be burned. And I said, I don't agree with you. Why do you say that? And he said, just look at the way he treated the Iroquois Indians after they massacred all of those white people.
What?
And I said, well, maybe, yeah, just a second. Wait a minute. I said, maybe they were a little upset at had their land invaded. And he said, we did not invade this land. We settled this land. And that gave me a lot of insight into the other side.
Yeah. That's bizarre. Thank you for sharing that with us, Dan, and thanks for the call. Lemoyne in Albuquerque, New Mexico, you want to tell us the story about Sally Thompson, who's 90 years old, doing a walk in honor of Granny D?
Yes. Unfortunately, she has made a pit stop here in the Civic Center, so it's me. But, yes, she did the first 2 miles from the Albuquerque Center for Peace and Justice downtown here, and is about to turn north and go towards Santa Fe.
Oh, you're with her?
Yes.
But she's not available right at the moment.
No, she went downstairs, and I'm afraid if I go down in the basement, that'll be the end of the call.
Yeah. Well, give her our best regards, would you? And you know, we're on every day. She's going to be doing this for a while. Calling one of these times, and now that I know what's going on, I'll be sure and put you on the air right away, okay?
Okay, we will call back. She is, she's got it all planned out. She's going to do, 2 miles a few times a day and make the 60 miles, turn 91 later this week.
Okay, please give Sally Thompson our very best, and we look forward to talking with her later on in the week. Thanks, Lemoyne, for the call. Paula in Seattle. Hey, Paula.
Oh, hi, Tom. My name's Paula, and this is the first time I've ever turned to your show. I was flipping through the cable channels, and when I heard the words coming out of your mouth about Columbus Day, you caught my attention, and I'll be listening now from here on.
Thank you.
It's really rare, the percentage of Caucasian people that show empathy for, indigenous people and the reality about what happened. There's always seems to be so many excuses made to justify what happened. And Columbus Day is like celebrating the atrocities over and over again. It's a really hurtful thing to think about. And someone like myself, I feel like nobody would listen or hear me.
Are you of Native American ancestry, Paula?
Yeah. What was that?
Are you of Native American ancestry?
I have Native American ancestry. I'm mixed race. My father's African American with Choctaw Indian history, and my mother's Caucasian, Swedish, German history. So I'm really, you know, I'm a mix, and I have, you know, I get feedback from both sides. I have all my life, but it's really hard to you know, hear people justify something like Columbus Day, because it was the beginning of like what you said, you know, the destruction of indigenous cultures, and it's saying over and over again that was okay, that was good, we're glad that happened, you know, and it's just disregarding all these other cultures.
Not just disregarding, disrespecting, like, and even beyond disrespecting. It's basically, you know, pride and genocide. And you know, I the more I think about it, the more I think that this analogy between Columbus and ISIS is not all that far off. You know, particularly Columbus was using Catholicism to justify what he was doing. ISIS is using Islam to justify what they're doing. Columbus was a murderous, genocidal freak, and so are the ISIS guys. I think we've got it. Paula, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We will be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Oh, this should be interesting. Kevin says, attack on Columbus Day is a Marxist plot to destroy American history. Looking forward to that conversation. Stick around, Kevin. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Marcia in Englewood, Florida. Hey, Marcia. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. You wanted to mention Larry Pressler? Presser?
I just received an email this morning, Daily Cause, with a story about Larry Pressler.
Mm-hmm.
In it, they're talking about hiding in the closet and all that stuff, you know, all the weird stuff that. But in the middle of it somewhere, comes out that even though he has lived in Washington, D.C. for the past 20 years, following the election.
Right. It's Marcia. I'm sorry. Marcia, your phone is breaking up so badly. I'm hearing just fragments. But thank you for the call. And I'm looking. I just, while you were talking, I pulled up Daily Kos, and Joe McCarter. The top story there is about Larry Pressler. It says Joan writes, Larry might be trying to get some mileage and Democratic credibility by saying he voted for President Obama and is his friend, but he sure as hell sounds a lot like a Republican. He's a member of the Fix the Debt. This is the latest thing from Simpson and Bowles. Well, these aren't necessarily Republicans. These are the right wing Democrats too. The kind of Clinton Democrats, the Bill Clinton Democrats. I don't know where Hillary stands on this. I'm assuming she's probably the same place. But amazing. Let's see here, Michael in Denver. Hey, Michael, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. And what's up?
Good morning, Tom. Tom, I just wanted to call in and comment here that being here in Denver, they would have a Columbus Day parade here on the west side of town, where more or less the Italian-American enclave has always been. And years ago, you probably got some press on this. About 10 years ago, there was a lot of political activism, in particular within the Native American community, to point out all the history you've been talking about today in terms of Columbus, which is absolutely accurate. Now, I've read it, and I have to honestly say that out here, the universities out here, this part of the country in New Mexico and Colorado, have some wonderful Indian study programs that don't get publicized as much, and they're not as, you know, they're humanities, so they don't get as much press. But in essence, one of the things that happened was that a small group of people from both sides tried to make it over a couple of Columbus Days, teaching moments, so to speak. You know, let's hold our opinions and all that, but let's try to teach the history.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's one of the best ways of doing it. And I certainly, I'm for indigenous you know, Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yeah.
And I have problems with Thanksgiving also. I don't, America the Beautiful, the second stanza, I will not sing that second stanza at all for references of what the people that came over. Your guy from Guns and Patriots mentioned something very interesting. What the Europeans did and what they made here in this country, and also that they brought to then indigenous people the word of the Savior, our Lord Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah. This is where I don't see much difference between Columbus and ISIS. And I want to expand that meme a little. Michael, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. We'll be right back. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV, too. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Was Christopher Columbus the ISIS of his generation? I don't know. Kevin in Raleigh, North Carolina, you think that I am part of a Marxist plot to destroy American history?
No, not you, Tom. I do think, I mean, it's no doubt Columbus was a tyrant. He was a bad person. There's no doubt about that. But I think just, you know, the fact that we celebrate the first contact and Western expansion through him, it's the attack on that really sort of stems from what you see all the time with Marxists, and that is they attack the national holidays. I've lived in Marxist countries, and, you know, it's something that happens all the time, you know, when they first come into power. We don't celebrate, you know, things that are horrible about Columbus Day. We celebrate the Western expansion. But I would say, you know, at the same time, people celebrate, you know, people celebrate Che Guevara, Mao, all these people.
Not as a national holiday here in the United States. And Karl Marx was an economist. He wrote about economics, carried on an interesting conversation, correspondence with Abraham Lincoln, among other people. What does Marxism or Marx have to do with Columbus? I don't get it.
Well, Karl Marx, nothing. But when you look at the Marxists that are around today, none of them actually do anything that Karl Marx had intended. You have Obama passing the TPP. You have Obama passing the Montreal.
Are you suggesting that Obama is a Marxist?
I suggest that, yes, he is. I mean, there's no doubt. He said he loves socialism. There's no doubt Obama's a Marxist, but he's not a good Marxist, and neither are most of the people like Bernie Sanders, who say the same stuff, yet still pass these ridiculous trade agreements. Marx focused.
Bernie Sanders has opposed every single trade agreement since NAFTA, CAFTA, and SHAFTA back in the 1990s.
He's backing Obama on the TPP.
No, he's not. Bernie Sanders is actively and aggressively, along with Sherrod Brown, along with most of the progressive caucus. It's over 90 members, the largest caucus in the House of Representatives. They're all opposed to the TPP.
I have him confused with Barry, what's his name, but
I think you have him confused with some conservadem someplace, because
the Democrats are fully backing him. Maybe the progressives, some progressives aren't, but the Democrats are fully backing the TPP. Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi, full throttle.
No.
And Tom, why?
No, Harry Reid, in fact, pulled it off the congressional agenda back a couple months ago.
After people raised hell, look, Tom, they passed the Monsanto Protection Act. Obama put the VP of Monsanto over the FDA.
You know, Kevin, I get it that, you know, you want to come on the air and you want to attack Obama and all this kind of stuff. But calling him a Marxist, it makes people laugh at you.
Tom, that's his words. Look at what he wrote in college. Look at what he said on, you know, to these groups of people that are Marxists on his campaign trail, Tom. You talk about the stuff he said he's going to do, like close Gitmo. You talk about all the lies.
Closing Gitmo is a Marxist thing. Karl Marx was an economic analyst. He analyzed how capitalism works. Have you ever read Das Kapital, or for that matter, Marx and Engels, The Communist Manifesto? It's only like 40 pages. Have you ever read it, Kevin?
Yes, of course. I'm not saying that was a Marxist thing. I'm saying Obama is a Marxist, self-admitted. I'm saying that
Kevin, I'm sorry. You have been watching too much Fox or listening to too many right-wing talk show hosts. Yeah, I wish that Obama was a Marxist. I wish he understood Marx's critique and analysis of capitalism. Any economist, by the way, who has studied any economics at all should understand that those things. I don't think Marx's prescriptions were necessarily right, or at least Engels' prescriptions were necessarily right. But Marx's analysis of capitalism, I defy you to find one piece of Marx's analysis of capitalism in Das Kapital that you can dispute, Kevin.
Oh, I can dispute plenty of it because it leaves out human nature.
No, it doesn't.
It leaves out the fact
it
that
does
people
not.
Are going to want private property, Tom.
No, it does
it,
not.
It refutes the completely unsensible, Tom. I read Marx. I agree with Marx on certain points. You can't have.
I'm talking about his. I'm giving you his prescriptions didn't work. They work fine for small communities. The kibbutz in Israel, communist Marxist. If you've got 100, 200 people, everybody knows everybody, you can run things with communal ownership. But once you have a society large enough for people to behave anonymously, then, that communal ownership doesn't work. But that doesn't mean that the analysis of capitalism that Marx laid out, which was brilliant. And by the way, Marx wasn't the first one to do it. A lot of what Marx was saying was what Adam Smith said in Theory of Moral Sentiments back in 1779.
Tom, I agree with you, but I'm saying that
Obama. Obama's not sitting around doing a critique of capitalism.
But I'm not talking about Obama solely.
You're saying that Obama's a Marxist. It's nonsense. This is Fox News bumper sticker garbage.
No, Tom, he admitted it. Look, the socialists of today, they preach this stuff, but only at the middle class, Tom. You have these politicians who are backing all kinds of corporate.
Kevin, what's a socialist?
A socialist is a person who's on a progressive march towards communism, which is, take away private property slowly. Take away rights.
Did you go to public schools, Kevin?
No, I went to a private school, Tom.
You went to private school. Okay, so you were able to exempt yourself from our socialist.
I'm not part of your dumbed down Common Core audience.
Okay,
Tom,
and do you drive on public roads, Kevin?
My degree. Sure, I do, Tom. And I don't think that shouldn't be handled by government. But I'm not a socialist in the regards to where I think we need to redistribute wealth amongst people, and we need to pay for other people.
So you think the roads should be privatized? You think our schools should be privatized?
They could be, Tom. They could be privatized.
Well, at least you're consistent, Kevin. You're talking about David Koch's campaign platform in 1980 when he ran for vice president on the Libertarian ticket.
I am a libertarian, but I would say
that
the people.
It's really tragic.
Today,
Kevin, libertarians who are you worth more than $100 million?
No.
Okay. Then you're a sucker. Libertarian people who claim that they are libertarians who are average working people, or even, if you got a couple million bucks, you're a sucker for the people who are the real rich in this country. Because under libertarian theology, like in places like the libertarian paradise of Liberia, for example, no public infrastructure, no public schools, no public nothing except an army and a court system. This is what the Koch brothers would like to have. Well, I can't say what they want to have for America, but this is the libertarian fantasy, and it's toxic.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and I am so pleased and honored to have in the studio with me.
Coaching me how to do radio.
Joe Madison, the Black Eagle on SiriusXM Urban View, weekdays 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. SiriusXM Channel 110.
Put the microphone there. Yeah.
And I'm like, here, Joe, move the microphone a little bit. You know how to use a damn microphone. JoeMadison.net, by the way, is the website. Hey, Joe, great to have you back with us.
Thank you.
So,
poor Kevin.
That was our last caller.
Oh my God, man! Yeah. I pulled up my iPhone. I said, "Oh, because I interviewed this morning Dr. Richard Curran of the Smithsonian, who's written an extensive book on Columbus." And so we don't celebrate Columbus to celebrate the expansion of the Western world. Yeah. We celebrate Columbus primarily because Roosevelt wanted to make political points with Italian Americans during the 1930s.
Right.
You know, and yeah, you know, I mean, and Columbus, I mean, he was a thug. I mean, Columbus, great navigator, but it brought disease. A poor governor, a poor man, a manager, was arrested when he got to Spain. His family spent a fortune. Matter of fact, his name wasn't Columbus. That was an Englandization angle of his name. And brought disease. He died of venereal disease, by the way.
Yeah.
There was a whole thing on him. Now, again, it's not to say that he didn't navigate, but remember now, he was looking for India.
Right.
He understood, as a lot of people did in the world, many, that the world was probably round. What he didn't realize was that there was a big continent
in the middle
of it, and he was really trying to find a shorter route than what Marco Polo. This was about trade, and it wasn't about Western expansion. Yeah. And by the way, he got 10% of everything he was able to steal, rob, and he killed Indians, chopped off their arms if they didn't work. They fought back. They didn't have enough to mine the gold. I just hope Kevin's listening. So that, and in essence, what it did was really introduce the slave trade to the Western Hemisphere, because they had to find more humans. And the Catholic Church, by the way, had a major debate in the 1500s as to whether or not these Indians who were here thousands of years before Columbus discovered them, you know, our debate was whether they were humans or beasts of burden.
Whoa.
And that was a debate that the Catholic Church had.
Whoa.
And they came down on the side eventually that they were humans.
Yeah.
So, you know, if we're going to study history, if we're going to talk history, tell it all.
Yep.
That's the only thing. And as far as being a libertarian, I'm thinking of this Ebola and the fact, and you played it earlier in your show.
Yeah.
You know, they cut $1.5 billion, or they would have had probably a vaccine now for this Ebola.
Yeah.
Well, here's what a libertarian should be thinking. You would think that the pharmaceutical companies that are making a fortune, they're making a fortune. Why would they not come to the White House, to our so-called Marxist president, in air quotes? Why wouldn't they come to the White House and say, you know what, we'll do what Henry Ford did. We'll do what the aeronautical giants did during World War II. We'll make up the shortfall, and we'll check our egos at the door.
Mm.
Forget who gets credit, who gets the profit, and we'll come up with a vaccine. And we'll do it not just for the United States, but we'll do it for the world. Now, that, I would think that's what a libertarian would want. Do you see any CEO being interviewed about this?
Well, this is what's so dysfunctional about this libertarian fantasy that the quote free market will solve everything. It's nonsense. The free market only makes profits.
Yeah, well,
and
as frightened as everybody is about Ebola, they certainly wouldn't have problems selling the vaccine.
Yeah,
it, and they could easily again. If, you know, and people, you know, will tell you, someone quoted you the other day on my show and said, you know, Tom Hartman, he's like me, he wants to get rid of these big agencies. I said, like what? And then I said, like what, the EPA? Yeah. I said, wait a minute, really? And I almost woke you up. It was it was about 6:30 in the morning. And
that would have woken me up.
I said, I don't have to do that. I said, no, I think he wants fresh drinking water and, you know, and clean air. And
yeah, I'm all in favor of that stuff.
I think he's for that.
That's why we have a government.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're talking with Joe Madison. Joe Madison, the Black Eagle on SiriusXM Urban View, weekdays Monday 6 to 10 a.m., SiriusXM channel 110, joemadison.net, the website. Joe, another day, another horrible video coming out of basically terrorism in the United States.
It is a violation of people's, quite honestly, and I see you have the Constitution here in front of us.
Yeah.
It's a violation of the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution for all practical purposes.
Right.
I interviewed today. There's a video that was making the rounds of a young couple in Sandusky, Ohio. I used to, when I was very young, my grandparents, we used to go up there fishing. Cedar Point is up that way. You know, you're from Michigan, up in northern Ohio.
Yeah.
So here was a guy that the police pulled he and his girlfriend over with a two-month-old in the back seat. She's on her way to the hospital to see, I think somebody was sick or...
Wasn't her mother dying?
Something like that. I think these cases are starting to run together now.
Yeah.
But they stop her for seatbelt violation.
Right.
She didn't have her seatbelt on. She was driving. He had his seatbelt on. So then they decide to go around to the passenger side of the car and ask to see his ID. I think his name is Stockett. And he says, I don't have to show you my ID. You know, what did I do? I didn't do anything. I've got my seatbelt on. I don't see your ID. So then he decided to once again pull out, thank God, his iPhone, and he started to record it.
Right.
Well, I mean, they started screaming at him, telling him to get out the car, ended up bringing a dog in to sniff for drugs. And here's what they found out afterwards, and they have it all on tape. One, the two officers involved, had spoken to this man. Now, this is Sandusky, Ohio. So as his lawyer said, he's from Sandusky, Ohio. I know everybody's name, including the name of their cat and dog.
That's
how
small
the town is. Right, small town. And said the officers had spoken to him a half an hour before the stop. It's because he had come out of his house. Hey, how you doing? Whatever his name was. And, you know, they get in the car, they start driving, same two officers stop and say, show me your ID. You fit the description of somebody we're looking for who happened to have a warrant for check kiting, for false identification on a check. Now, ask, why would you then bring out the drug dog? If you're looking for somebody who's signing bad checks or ID. So guess what? They brought out the dog. Said the dog made a hit. It's all on tape. The dog made a hit on the car. This was justification to take them out of the car.
That gave
them probable cause.
Right.
Guess what's on tape? The police officer taking a ball and throwing a ball against the car. And the dog went for the ball.
Of course. Amazing. Amazing.
And it's all on tape.
I want to get into this. Where we've been, where we're going, and what this might mean. Because it seems like there's a changing... gestalt, a changing sense of the spirit of the times here in America
right now.
Because
of video.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. This is a technologically driven cultural change. More with Joe Madison right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And be sure to check out Joe Madison's website, joemadison.net. 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, Joe Madison with me. And, Joe, let's pick up a couple of phone calls from some of our Free Speech TV viewers here. Ed's watching us on DirecTV in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ed, you're on the air with Joe Madison and me.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Joe, how are you guys doing today?
I'm fine.
Good.
Glad to hear it. Hey, I was wondering if Ebola is possibly the smallpox blankets of 2014.
Hmm.
We've got multinational corporations over there cutting down the forest. And, you know, they leave behind them just rutted landscape. And, of course, it rains, and then mosquitoes start, and the bats bite the mosquitoes. And, you know, seems to me that you know, all this stuff is leading to people getting sick. And, of course, I thought Ebola was only in laboratories, that they, you know, got rid of it a long time ago. But somehow it's back infecting people and becoming a worldwide epidemic.
Yeah. Well, it's not really a worldwide epidemic. I think in the Western African countries, there's been something like 4,000 people that have died. And this discussion comes up frequently. I don't know how you prove it, or to be very honest with the caller, I don't know how you disprove it. Because if it was, in fact, a deliberate, like the smallpox, I mean, since we're talking about Indigenous Day, People Day, Columbus Day, everyone knows, who was it, Andrew Jackson, and the displacement of
with blankets in Ohio.
Cherokees and moving them to the Southwest. They tried to kill as many as they could and infected the blankets on winter marches with smallpox. Whether that's being done or not, I you know, I'm not really in a position to say. Is it possible? You know, I'm one of these skeptics. Almost anything could be possible, but it certainly has failed in countries like Nigeria, for example.
They stopped it.
Yeah, they stopped it. That's absolutely right, and a lot of it has to do. Nigeria is a very wealthy country. It has the resources to do it. So I don't know. I know the reality is that scientists know they do have a vaccine. As you played earlier in your show, the head of NIH saying, you know, hey, we would have had a vaccine had our budget not been cut by almost $2 billion.
Yeah. In fact, his exact quote, he said, NIH has been working on Ebola vaccine since 2001. It's not like we suddenly woke up and thought, oh, my gosh, we should have something here. Frankly, if we had not gone through our 10-year slide in research support, we probably would have a vaccine in time for this and would have gone through clinical trials and would be ready right now.
And I didn't realize until I had read that quote in that story today that you just read that 80% of the funds for the NIH go towards research.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of it goes through the universities, and then
the universities.
And then the people who take that research are the drug companies.
Right.
You know.
Right. And it goes back to just what we said then. You remember when the automobile industry was failing?
Yeah.
And the president called in all the automobile executives and said, "Okay, what can we do? What can you do? What will we do?" I'm visualizing in my mind the same possible. If I were advising the president, that's exactly what I would say to him. Call the pharmaceutical giants in and say, "Look, guys, let's make up the shortfall.
Yeah.
This is what we should do for humanity."
Exactly. This is for humanity. Absolutely. We'll be right back. 20 minutes past it. We're back with Joe Madison, the Black Eagle. Joe Madison, the Black Eagle on Sirius XM Urban View, weekdays, 6 to 10 a.m., Sirius XM Channel 110, joemadison.net, the website. You can tweet at Madison Sirius XM, S-I-R-I-U-S XM. And, Joe, we were talking about let's get back to the videos for just a moment.
Sure, please. Mm-hmm.
We were talking before we went on the air. When I was a kid, I used to read these Raymond Chandler novels. Raymond Chandler was back in the 1930s. He wrote wasn't Sam Spade. It was one of those famous detectives from the 30s. I forget the guy's name. And just about every novel, or at least every other story, he'd go into the quote colored part of town with some police, and they just beat the crap out of people for fun. Not him, but the cops. Basically documenting what the cops were up to. And this is nothing new. It's just that now, you know, even 10 years ago, people might have had a phone, but they didn't have a video camera in their hand. And now everybody's got a video camera, and it's changing at least how aware people who are not people of color are of the situation, the people of color.
Exactly. I mean, we were talking about, I was telling you, one of the things that we played was an old Richard Pryor skit where he does this joke in Richard Pryor style, which we can't do on your show. But he talks about, you know, makes a joke about how he is stopped and he has to put up his hands and tells the policeman, look, I am reaching for my driver's license because I don't want to be a accident.
Right.
Because in those days when you got shot or you got beat, it was an accident.
Mm.
That's what they would go to the prosecutor with. That's what they would go to the courts with. And this also speaks to the fact that the prosecutors and the police often worked hand in hand. Mm. So a poor African American who probably didn't have any real great legal representation didn't stand a chance in court because it's your word against a sworn police officer. So you didn't stand a chance with the prosecutor. You didn't stand a chance with the courts. You didn't have the Johnny Cochrans of the world, you know, that or the crumps that we have now. The key is that we've got two things going for us, technology, and you said it. One, and I said this when they had this campaign of put your hands up. You know, this is a campaign that got started. I said, yeah, put your hands up, but keep your iPhone in your hand.
There you go.
And so that's number one. Number two is also the Internet. Mm-hmm. So now when it happens, instantaneously, we see it,
right.
And people get to see for themselves what these policemen are doing. What's so crazy is how dumb some of these cops are. They, in some cases, know they're being videotaped. Take the police officer in New York who took $1,000 from a guy. He apparently had $1,000. This was in New York. $1,000 he had pulled out of the bank because he was going to buy a present for his girlfriend who was with him. And the policeman, did you see that video?
I did, yeah.
And the policeman starts beating him.
Grabs money, sticks it in his pocket.
And sticks it in his pocket and knows that the girlfriend is videotaping him.
Right.
Then he pepper sprays the guy who he took the money from and then turns around and pepper sprays this. But what I hope we all understand is that this cannot just be a black versus white issue. There are black police officers that sometimes, and in the days you're talking about, if the first black police officer, because I used to hear old timers say this, the first black police officer in Boston, the first black police officer where I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, or in Detroit, had to be tougher on the black community than the white cops to prove their worth.
Yeah.
And ironically, Tom, and history proves me out on this, these same black officers could not issue a ticket or arrest a white citizen unless a white policeman was present.
In a much smaller way, there was a variation on that in the 1870s to the 1890s with the Irish cops in Boston.
Yes.
And, you know, that this was a... Well, it was in some ways very similar.
Very similar.
And
that's right. Because
they,
that's
in fact, the mythology, there was a whole book written about the Irish gene and how the Irish were predisposed to crime, which is why they ended up in Australia.
That's exactly right.
And so you had to get these brutal Irish cops who were the only ones who were capable of holding down the criminal Irish neighborhoods, right? And, I mean, it's just like these racist stories.
Yeah, well, Michelle Alexander has, again, a great book. It's been out for several years now called The New Jim Crow.
Right.
And, you know, I wish people who quote it would read it. Mm-hmm. It's well worth reading it. But she goes into the history that goes back, and people hate to bring up slavery, but the reality is that this attitude towards the criminalization of African Americans goes back to slavery. I mean, we talk about the Fugitive Slave Act. Yeah. Same thing. What was the Fugitive Slave Act? A free person could literally be snatched off the streets of Washington, D.C., a free African American, by anybody, and then turned over to the authorities, and they had no recourse, and they could be sent right back into slavery, or you could escape. These were criminal, considered criminal activities, escaping. Doug Blackman, who's written a fascinating book, talks about how African Americans, particularly in the South, if they didn't have a job, could be arrested.
Wow.
In certain southern cities, because they would be, they could literally be snatched off the street because they were standing on a street corner.
Right.
And if asked, well, what are you doing? Well, I'm sorry, I don't have a job. I'm just standing. They could be arrested.
Loitering.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Be arrested for it.
Joe Madison with us. We'll be taking your calls and continuing this conversation right after this. It's 28 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. Joe Madison, the Black Eagle on Sirius XM Urban View, weekdays 6 to 10 a.m., Monday through Friday, every morning on Sirius XM Channel 110. Check out his website, joemadison.net.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And you can tweet Joe at Madison Sirius, SIRIUSXM. Madison Sirius XM. Before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, your media support group for We the People, and Tom Hartman, fair and slightly only slightly unbalanced. Joe Madison with us. You're totally balanced. You're one of those grounded people I know.
I don't know. It depends on who you talk to. I'm thinking about writing a book called Hate Tweets. I mean, I'm just amazed.
Hate tweets?
Well, yeah, you get all these hate tweets. Is that what they are?
Really?
Tweets? Oh,
yeah.
God. I mean, and they're always in all caps, and it's amazing how many nasty things they can say in one sentence.
Whoa.
You know.
Yeah, in 144 characters.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, and I keep them. A lot of them I keep, you know. My wife tells me, delete.
Yeah.
But I'm keeping them. People would be amazed at how much courage folks have when they can hide behind a keyboard.
Yeah, yeah. When they're not.
Oh, boy, whoa. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. So what do, you know, back to our conversation earlier, where do you, it seems to me like as much, despair is the wrong word, but as much outrage or upset as is, you know, bubbling across the American landscape as a consequence of video after video after video of basically black people being killed or terrorized by white police officers, and in some cases by black police officers,
yes, yes.
That this is actually a good thing in my mind, because what it means is, we're waking up, and especially people who have never had any contact with or any experience of the lives of people of color in this country, they're starting to wake up. And I don't know how much longer Fox News will be able to deny that this kind of stuff is going on, but I think
as
that
long
day
as
is coming.
The Fox News,
yeah, of course.
But you're absolutely right. So let's deal with what are solutions. Obviously, it has to be multifaceted. We talked about the fact what Clinton, former President Clinton, tried to do, get officers out of their squad cars, and they've got to know the community, walk the streets, get to know the people in the communities, get to know that individual, particularly the elders who, you know, on their porch, they're the ones that watch and see what's going on. Yeah. Get to know the people in the community. So, and that met with some resistance. There has to be retraining. I'm almost of the mind that I think we have too low of an educational threshold for policing. You know, I think police officers ought to at least have an associate degree, and if not, a 4-year college degree.
Yeah.
Number three, we've had officers call in, people who serve now, said part of the problem they have, and never will forget, a gentleman called in just last week who said his company's job is that they evaluate future police officers. He said that in one job, it was a city in Texas, 50 candidates. They ended up getting rid of all but 12.
Oh.
And most of them were former military.
Oh, yeah.
People had come out of the military and then wanted to get into policing. but they hadn't shifted their mentality. You know, being a soldier and being in the military is a heck of a lot different than a policeman who's sworn to protect and serve.
Right. Whereas soldiers are there to kill, period.
Well, they're there. That's absolutely right. And war has a difference. So we in the black community have unfortunately seen the police as an occupying force. Mm. And that mentality has to change. When you grew up, I bet you it's a lot different where you grew up in Michigan, right?
Yeah, Lansing.
I bet you the police weren't considered an occupying force. You probably knew the officers, maybe. You might have seen them at the grocery store. Your father may have seen them, your mother. Right? In my community, when I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, we didn't know any police officers.
Yeah.
You know, and they sort of had this attitude, you know, that as if we were predisposed to criminal activity. And most people in the black community wanted safe streets. We wanted criminals to be caught, you know. So you've got to reconnect. But it's going to take more than just wishing it would happen. So I think, you know, I'd be very interested to see what the Attorney General has come up with. He's got a plan. There hasn't been a lot of detail with it, but I'd love to see what he and other police officers are planning to do. But you're going to also have to bring in prosecutors, too.
Right.
The Attorney General has said, at least on the federal level, you know, he's told district attorneys, you know, you guys have got to stop this warehousing, just running people through the system. I think we've got to do away with prisons for profit.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. Yeah. So it's multifaceted.
They're the ones lobbying for the, you know, three strikes and longer sentences.
Absolutely.
No discretionary sentencing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's multifaceted.
It's a structural thing.
It really is. And I'm so glad that you brought up that, you know, allowed me to discuss the fact that you know, black police officers can sometimes be just as hard and just as unfair as white police officers can be. See, too often when I talk about it or some other leaders discuss it, they think it's always us versus the white community. Mm-hmm. And I tell you that I wish there were more of the attorney in Fox Hall, the neighborhood here in Washington, D.C., that everyone hopefully saw, where here was a 64-year-old man. I don't know how many people, and I interviewed her, matter of fact, the next day. 64-year-old man who had worked in that community. This is an upscale Washington, D.C. neighborhood.
Right.
For 30 years, he was partially paralyzed from a stroke. An alarm went off in a house in the next block. Come to find out, the owner of the house had put the wrong code in.
Oh, jeez.
That's why the alarm went off. So the policemen, they show up, and the first person they stop is a 64-year-old man who, by the way, is standing there talking to a gardener.
Yeah.
And then they, you know, grab him, set him down. She puts on the gloves, so she's getting ready to search him. And thank goodness, this lady walks out and says, "What are you doing?"
Right, and she's a lawyer.
And she's a lawyer, and she, you know. And
she's white.
And that's right. And, she, you know, she didn't have to. And she said, "No, you're not going to do this. Grab the guy by the arm." What I did tell my audience, if that had been in Southeast Washington, D.C., in Ward 8, one of the blackest, lowest income places, and a black woman had done that, they probably would have arrested her.
Or shot her. You know,
pepper sprayed her.
Yeah. It's almost like, you know, the man is the man, regardless of the color of his skin or her.
Oh, so, yeah.
And this is the level. You know, in Denmark, the police officers and the teachers are the most highly paid civil servants, and they have the best educational system in the world, and they have some of the lowest crime. And it's not, you know, there's a whole bunch of different reasons for that. But I think one of the, and Denmark, Norway, a lot of the Scandinavian countries, they pay their police really well, but it's really hard to become a police officer. It's about as difficult to become a cop or a teacher in Denmark as it is to become a doctor. and they all make about the same. And that's those are the kind of standards that I think we should be looking at here. Our teachers hold our future. Our cops hold our present. This is the quality of our life, is these two professions.
I would think in one of these 285,000 books you've written, somewhere it, I say
I think you're setting up my next book here, Joe.
I'm still trying to figure out how to write one. But somewhere it has to be, you know, what made the United States different from all Western countries was public education.
Yeah.
Public education is what really set us apart from the rest of the world. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And I've said this and I'll keep saying it again. Education is the new currency of the 21st century. Education is the new currency of the 21st century. I don't care anywhere in this world. People who lack education will go by boat, tunnel, whatever they can to go find work in another country and take the most menial work that they can get their hands on because they lack education. People who have education, who have skills, are not trying to cross the Rio Grande. They're not trying to cross the Straits of Gibraltar. They're, you know, I was reading the other day, and it doesn't make a lot of news. I think it was, these boats that these folks from Northern Africa, Sudan, Ethiopia, something like 700 people drowned in an accident, and they were all poor, uneducated people trying to get to Europe to find menial work.
Did you see where Germany last week, banned all college tuition? It's now illegal in Germany to charge college tuition.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm dead serious. There was only one state that still had it. Prior to, I think it was 96, either 86 or 96, when the conservatives took the Christian Democratic Party, which is sort of like the Republican Party here, it's kind of the conservative. Mm-hmm. When they took over, they started tuition. There hadn't been any tuition since World War II. They started it. It spread to all eight states. Seven of the states had banned it. And last week, Lower Saxony banned it. Tuition is now illegal in Germany.
You remember California?
California?
Until
Ronald Reagan came along.
Wow. Talk to my wife who grew up in California. She'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
If you could get the grades, you were smart enough.
It was free.
You're practically
listening
free.
To the Tom Hartman program. Yeah. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Yeah, I hitchhiked out to California in 68. Half my friends from MSU were out there going to get a free college education at UC. We'll be right back with Joe Madison. Stick around. Welcome back. Winston in Ormond Beach, Florida. You're on the air with, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. You're on the air with Joe Madison and me.
Oh, why, thank you.
I will.
Hey, listen, boy, you two guys are my favorite people. You know, you're my favorite brothers. But listen, I worked law enforcement for about 28 years, almost 30 years. And, you know, I worked in the penitentiaries in the prison. I was a prison guard. And, you know, I used to see some awful, vicious acts put on by people that you'd think would be decent human beings, you know, these officers, you know, a lot of them. And down here in Florida and elsewhere, these police, they're doing stupid things like killing people. And, like if there were white guys doing the same thing down here, we had two cases in Deltona, where two white guys within 1 week, they ended up walking the streets with guns shooting at the cops. And, they didn't do anything to them. They all lived to tell about it. And it was written in the paper, and they talk. But it needs to start at the top, like these administrators at the top. You know, they need to, if you've got somebody working in your agency where you've got this kind of stuff going on and you're protecting them, they need to start at the top. Fire these people at the top and get your department in order, you know. And down here in Florida, Central Florida where I live, I mean, you don't see any of that order, you know, being held. Only one place over in Daytona, we have a police chief that's pretty cool. He's pretty good, a guy named Chitwood, and he's like an old-fashioned cop, but he keeps his department in order, where the rest of these places, they let these guys run wild, and they're like cowboys, and they're uneducated, and education isn't going to help them, actually. It's just that they have a lot of power, they got a gun, they have life and death over you, and it needs to stop at the top, and that's what I have to say about that.
And I would argue, I would also make the point, too, he's one, I hear, and I get just scores of calls just like this, and it's usually from veteran police officers who say the exact same thing that this caller just said, almost verbatim. And I would only add one other thing. You also need to have the mayors that appoint the chiefs of police or the city councils that, you know, sign off on.
Case in point, Ferguson.
And which, so that means that the citizens have to be civically engaged. See, remember what one guy said? This is when they had a hearing, a city council hearing. He says, I've been going to these city council meetings, and this is the most people I've ever seen. You guys have got to start coming to these meetings. But you also know that in communities where there is high voter registration, high voter turnout, you don't have this problem. Because mayors have to be accountable. So a mayor appoints a chief, and you've got to appoint the kind of chief that will do just what this veteran officer said. When you talk to most veterans, they'll tell you the same thing he's saying. It starts at the top. No ifs, ands, buts about it.
Yeah, and we're the country where 30-40% of Americans vote. I mean, you know.
Thank you.
It's especially local elections. Sometimes you'll have a 25% turnout if it's
on
not,
off-year elections. Yeah. You know, what Republicans are depending right now on low voter turnout.
That's their only strategy.
Suppress the vote. Suppress the vote.
You know, the Supreme Court didn't help them out a whole lot last year.
Thank you.
Which is very interesting. Joe Madison with us. We'll be back with more of our conversation with Joe Madison and your calls for Joe right after this. 10 minutes before the end. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Joe Madison in the studio with us. Joe, I started out I didn't start the first hour of the program, but after a conversation with Neil McCabe, went off on this rant about Homeland. And Homeland, back in the '20s, when Hitler was in jail and he and Rudolf Hess were writing Mein Kampf, they were serious students of the Zionist movement, the Jewish movement to have a homeland. And they borrowed Germany had always been known as Der Vaterland, the Fatherland, Mutterland, Die Mutterland, but usually the Fatherland, or unsere Nation, you know. But nobody had ever called it a homeland. And Hitler and Hess thought we should borrow this from the Jews, from the Zionist movement, and create a racial identity for Germans. And so They came up with this slogan. It was called Blut und Erd, blood and earth. German blood, German soil. We are the people who came out of this soil. And in 1934, in the big Nazi coming out party, in the Nuremberg rally that Leni Riefenstahl made the movie out of. In fact, this clip is from that movie. Rudolf Hess introduced for the very first time the word homeland, which in German is Heimat. He says, Dank Ihren Führer, thanks to our Führer, we now have here in Germany, Heimat zu sein. We have the homeland. And then he says, Heimat zu sein für alles die Deutschen, die ganze Welt, for all the Germans in the whole world. And here's the introduction of the word homeland by Rudolf Hess. It's a real short clip. Here it is.
Dank Ihrer Führung wird Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen, Heimat zu sein. Heimat zu sein für alle Deutschen der Welt.
So this is the Germans' role, and then they called it homeland until after.
So what did he just say?
He just said, thanks to the Führer, we now have a homeland. Germany is the homeland for all Germans in the world. And it was about creating this kind of national identity.
All right.
So then along comes the Department of Homeland Security in 2002.
Okay.
And this word just, like, came out of nowhere. And there's a lot of us kind of scratching our heads going, you know, I never called this a homeland. This is homeland. Now, I can understand, you know, the Iroquois saying this is our homeland, or the Cherokees saying this is our homeland. We've been here 5-10,000 years. But for the rest of us who, you know, don't have roots in this continent, homeland, where's this coming from? And then I raised the question, and I don't, you know, is this the homeland, is homeland increasingly basically a white phrase or a white meme.
You know,
and are these police officers enforcing that?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, I have not thought about it in those terms. I really haven't. And so I'm not prepared, as tempted as I am to comment on it. I really need to give that some thought, because I really have not thought about that aspect of it. Of course, this is why I listen to your show every day, because you bring up things that, damn, I didn't.
Bless you, Joe.
Yeah, I never thought of it. I never thought of it that way.
But
I know what I see with the connection that you're trying to make. Now, I'm certain conservatives will probably say to you, but you know what? You know what? You raise a very interesting point, because ever since this, you know, the Obama administration, from the very beginning, what was the battle cry of conservatives in the Tea Party? We're going to take our country back.
Right. Homeland.
We kept saying, back from what? From who? What are you going to take it back from? Who took it from you?
Right.
So, I mean, let me
And it almost seems to me that these white cops stopping people of color, particularly African Americans, in this country are, you said it before, they're acting like an occupying army.
Yeah.
So they're occupying what they perceive to be they're saying these folks are in our homeland.
Yeah, well, I see, I would look at it a little differently. I think that what you have are people who simply have no socialization with African Americans or black people. So when you, like you talked about the Irish,
right,
in Boston, the Protestants didn't socialize with the immigrants. There was no socialization. They don't know the people that they're supposed to serve and protect. And they don't think they're worthy of serving and protecting. So now that's, so I would take it a little bit different. I'd go down a different avenue as an African American. That, you know, we have a socialization. We traveled the world together. We go out and we socialize together. We go to each other's homes. We discuss issues openly. But what you probably have in a lot of these departments are people who, if you ask them, do you have any black friends? And they'll probably say, oh yeah, I got a black friend.
Yeah.
You know, or they probably never went to school, maybe with one or two, that type of thing. I think it is more of a lack of socialization than maybe it is anything else. I'm not dismissing what you're saying, and that might play into it in a much deeper way.
Right.
But you're a very deep person.
Yeah, well,
it's a socialization.
Yeah, and I think bring it back to Columbus Day.
I mean, how many black folks did you grow up with?
No, pretty much none.
Yeah. You know, there's always one or two in the neighborhood.
Well,
you know,
and then we had busing happen.
Well, then, and you know what the reaction was to that.
It was not good.
No, it wasn't good at all on both sides of it. Absolutely right. Lack of socialization. So then, you know, as the decades went by, socialization took place and people started realizing, again, it's humanity.
Yeah.
We're talking about humanity. We live in a society. Unfortunately, all you have to do is be different. And if you're different, you're just simply not equal. You're just, you know, we just don't. I was with a reporter the other day, was talking about Virginia and the governor of Virginia signing an executive order. And the reporter said, the executive order guarantees privileges to gay people. And I stopped the reporter. I said, whoa, wait a minute. We're not talking about privileges. Talking about what?
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Right.
Just like everybody else.
Just like everybody else.
Joe Madison with us. Be sure to check out Joe's website, joemadison.net. Joe Madison, the Black Eagle on Sirius XM Urban View, weekdays 6 to 10 a.m., channel 110.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website.
ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Joe Madison's still with us for a little bit. You can stick around for another half hour, Joe.
Yes, sir.
It'd be really, really great. We got some interesting callers here. Let's see if we can provoke some conversation. Sam in Stone Mountain, Georgia. Hey, Sam, you're on the air with Joe Madison and me.
Yes, good evening, gentlemen. And Joe, it's nice to see you. This is the longest I have seen you on TV, and it's nice to see you.
Yeah, when they bring you into these news shows, you know.
You got 3 minutes.
It takes longer to put on the freaking makeup than it
you're right. We're going to have a good conversation tonight. We'll have a little more time.
At least on Tom's show, it gives you time to, say something, and then you share your time with five or six people,
So, Sam, the point you wanted to make?
I am 62 years old, and I was raised in the 50s and 60s. During the 60s, you had the white policemen on beats and was more whites. And they had a saying back in the 60s, the man in blue is a friend to you. And we respect the policemen as children. We'll walk with them when we see them walking in the streets. And we had no problems. I think the last policeman I saw walking might have been 1970 in Baltimore. But they need to get back to the neighborhoods and being friends to people. The bullying they done and do now, it's unnecessary. We need them to protect us. And we don't know what else to do. We don't carry guns, and we don't, as people who respect people, we respect policemen. And we're just looking for them to respect us. That's all. Yeah. And thank you.
Thank you, Sam. It's an excellent point.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like people are running around trying to make excuses for criminals, and that's such a misnomer. And this caller points it out. I mean, people want safe neighborhoods. They want their children to be safe, and they want the criminal element off the street. Now, as somebody once said, and I can't attribute the quote because I can't remember it. The best way to end crime is a job. I mean,
it was Franklin Roosevelt said the best welfare program in the world is a job.
Yeah, it's a job, and so, as I remember the same neighborhood he lived in, I bet you in Baltimore, people had jobs. Folks went to work. They were proud of their car. I think of when I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, everybody worked. Mm-hmm. Everybody went to work. And on Saturdays, man, the folks would be out washing their cars, the only car they had. But they'd wash that car and wax at that car, and you'd cut your grass
And then came Reaganomics.
Folks could make a living, and what I know what kept me out of crime was, again, respect for the police, and two, you don't want a record. Mm-hmm. You don't want a record, because remember, a record, if you got a record, I don't know if your father told you this, but my father told me, look, if you ever get a record, it'll stay with you the rest of your life.
Oh yeah, I heard that too.
Okay. And you can't do this and you can't do that, And I must admit, I was more afraid of my grandfather who raised me than I was the local police officer, because he would probably tell the officer, yeah, you arrest him, because when I get him home, he's going to wish he were somewhere else locked
Yikes.
Up and locked up with me.
Yikes.
But, I mean, different times. It was a different time.
Yeah.
But I think, again, as I said to you, this is it's multifaceted. It cannot just be one thing. And it can't be, as Fox would like you to believe, all personal responsibility. I keep saying this to people. Conservatives like to think it's all personal responsibility, personal responsibility. And sometimes liberals think it's all public policy.
It's both.
It's both. It's both personal responsibility and public policy.
Yeah, we got to figure that out. Jeff in Denver, you wanted to comment on white privilege?
Yeah, and first, I just want to make a really quick thing. It's really a strange thing now that I'm more afraid of the police than I am of criminals in general.
Mm-hmm.
And also, why are all these policemen fat? I mean, I thought we used to have health regulations. And
you say fat?
Maybe they're using tools because they're not in great physical shape.
Yeah.
But white privilege.
Donuts, I guess. Some things don't change. I mean,
talk to Dunkin' Donuts. Yeah. But you had a point you wanted to make, Jeff.
Yeah, as a male, I've always been, after the witch hunts of the previous decades, I've always been very cautious of perceptions when being around kids, you know, and now I have a mixed race family. So I've got a niece that appears to be black. Yeah, she's mixed race, but she's 6 years old. And when I'm out in public, all of a sudden I've got different consciousness, feel like I'm walking on thin ice. It's like, how is this going to be perceived of a, you know, a white guy walk around a little black girl?
Hmm.
And it just... You know, you can't relax the way you used to relax.
Right.
And so it gives me some idea of what, you know, perhaps a lot of black people are going through all the time.
You well, I hope you will relax. It's ironic because I'd stay with Tom the rest of the hour, but my granddaughter, who's coming over. The father's white. The mother is our youngest daughter. I guess maybe that's why I fight as hard as I do. I don't know. I think what you do is, look, relax. I would tell him an individual responsibility. There you go. Just relax. Then at the same time, whenever these incidences happen, like Ferguson, Sandusky, Ohio, and we've seen them time and time again. That's when we should transcend race.
Yeah.
And people need to speak up. Like the lady in Fox Hall in that neighborhood here in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
You know, to stand out there and I want your card. Mm. And to grab that man by the hand and say, come with me. You know, that's what we really, really need. Mm-hmm. And then I guarantee you, things will stop. Things will get better. If the problem is, you bring up Germany. You know what, as you know, one of the biggest problems in Germany in the rise of Hitler was what? Good people remained silent.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't say anything.
Yeah. Nietzsche, whoever it was, I forget the philosopher, but all that's required for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing.
To
remain silent.
That's right. King used to make that quote. Used to use that quote all the time.
Yeah, yeah. It's a real interesting time. Davis in Radford, Virginia. You had some thoughts on the word homeland? We have 1 minute to the break, Davis.
Yes.
Hey, you're on the air,
Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tom, you asked earlier if a person of color would call this homeland, and I would say that they would call it occupied homeland as well as Native Americans, because when you have an unemployment rate of 67% in places like Ferguson, and you have Indians that are forced onto reservations after their land, their riches, their culture has been stolen.
Mm-hmm.
You're really looking at an occupied existence.
Yeah, good point. Davis, thank you for the call. And that was my point about some of these police officers feel like they're not actually police officers, like they're an occupying army.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're talking, and that I can relate to, no ifs, ands, buts about it. And remember what I said, when there's a lot of these young men are coming out of the military.
Right.
And that's exactly what they've done for the last, 12 years.
And that might have been their only job experience. School, Army,
that's
now
right.
Cop,
that's right? Exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Joe Madison with us, the Black Eagle, Sirius XM Urban View, weekdays 6 to 10 a.m., Sirius XM Channel 110. We'll be back with Joe.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And check out Joe's website, joemadison.net. You can tweet him at Madison Sirius, SiriusXM, Madison Sirius XM. And welcome back. Tom Hartman and Joe Madison here with you. Did you want to talk? You want to take a call?
We were just talking about this, and I haven't seen this new movie, Kill the Messenger, but Gary Webb, you know, when I was doing talk radio before Sirius, Dick Greger and I took on the CIA. We were arrested twice in front of the CIA because we went in front of the CIA gate and took crime tape.
This is back in the 80s when they were bringing crack cocaine
Webb,
into the...
Gary Webb had done this series called Dark Alliance,
right,
where he had shown where the Contras were getting weapons, right? But the planes were coming back loaded with cocaine.
Right.
And it was so much cocaine that, once again, they devised a way to turn it into crack. And then crack showed up everywhere, if you remember. You know, yep. Cocaine used to be the champagne drug for the rich and the wealthy. And he did this amazing series called Dark Alliance for San Jose newspaper. Got a lot of attention. It caught my attention, and I interviewed Gary. I stayed on this case. Matter of fact, I was at WRC Radio here in Washington, D.C., and we went at it. We went at it. Called Dick Greger, and Dick Greger and I went out to the CIA to demand to see the director of the CIA to explain this.
Mm-hmm.
And so we took police tape, you know, crime scene, and we wrapped it around the front gate of the CIA and declared it a crime scene. They arrested us.
Yeah, of course.
And then we went, did our jail time, went back, and then we decided to go out again. And this time we took our crime tape, and then we took flour. We just took a thing of flour, and we started spreading it around the front of the gate.
Oh, as if it was cocaine. Like white powder.
Do you know those nuts brought out dogs?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, I'm not kidding you, man. As if we would have a 10-pound bag of cocaine. And I'm serious. We sat there. They're not bringing dogs out to sniff this stuff. Oh yeah, and they dog, and then they came and they arrested us.
Oh.
And then and they were going to keep us in jail for like, you know, 90 days or something like that. And then we were locked up. And then some government agency showed up and cut a deal with the judge and said, look, we don't want these guys staying in jail because as long as they stay in jail, all hell keeps breaking loose out here. And because there were like 5,000 people down at the D.C. Convention Center had heard we had gotten arrested, and they were going to march.
Whoa.
On the CIA. Yeah. They were going to march. And so they cut a deal. They brought us before the judge and said, look, we'll let you go. And we'll reduce it to a misdemeanor and pay your fine. But you got to promise us that you won't be back here for a year or something like that. But you know what? Once again, and what did the system do to Gary Webb?
They destroyed him. He committed suicide.
They tried. Yeah. Oh, shot himself twice. Remember?
Yeah.
In the head.
Right.
You know, shot him first time and then shot himself again.
Yeah. Good.
But this created suspicious. A tremendous amount of crime in our community.
Yeah. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Joe Madison in the studio with us for one last segment here before you got to boogie on out and see your granddaughter. Man, I'm jealous.
I've got a couple of older teenage granddaughters and a grandson who's, this kid is in the third grade doing algebra.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And he didn't get those genes from me. I could barely get out of algebra in my freshman year.
You're not a math guy.
Once again, we live in a different world. I mean, we live, and it's rapid, man. It's rapid. It wasn't too long ago you couldn't get married if you were black or white in the state of Virginia. It took a Supreme Court decision. So it's just like now with gay marriages, you know.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't privileges that people are asking for, you know. And this whole crime thing, I mean, this Ferguson, and I got to tell you what concerns me about Ferguson. I'm really concerned that prosecutor is not going to prosecute that officer.
Yeah. I think it's all pretty much already set up.
And then what happens?
Yeah.
Then
it gets messy.
It gets messy. It gets really messy. So, and I think that's what they're anticipating.
I had a conversation last week with an African-American conservative on the TV show. Fellow who you know and have met, and we were talking about the police and the way the police are disproportionately, the police and the criminal justice system has disproportionately worked against the interests of African Americans and defended privilege, basically, white society. And he immediately went to, no, the real problem here is black on black crime, and you and I had this conversation a couple of years ago about that phrase, and I had been a white guy, I could have jumped down his throat.
You should have jumped down his throat anyway. I mean,
so
you I'll give you the very non knee jerk reaction. First of all, don't confuse the rate with the actual numbers.
Right.
More white people in America commit violent crimes numerically than black people.
Sure.
Now, that's a fact.
Yeah.
What people refer to is the rate by virtue of percentages.
Right.
So it's crazy. You know, no one, and here's what I always say. You never hear the term white-on-white crime.
Even though that's the majority of crime in the United States.
The majority of violent crime in the United States is committed white-on-white.
Right.
People tend to commit. And so the real problem is, and that's the third response, the real problem is not black-on-black crime. The real problem is crime. People tend to commit crimes where they live.
Right.
So
you could even argue that part of the problem is segregation, de facto segregation.
De facto, yes, de facto segregation, absolutely, versus de jure segregation.
Right.
Absolutely right. If I take you to a poor, low-income trailer park, where it's mostly poor white people, I guarantee you if you went down to the police station or the police precinct, it would primarily be poor white people committing crimes against each other.
Sure.
And no news person would ever say white on white crime. We never hear that term. That's part of the whole cultural conditioning that somehow black crime. Black conservatives love to kick these terms around that someone made up a few years ago. Some sociologist made up a
Frank
few.
Frank Luntz came up with it.
I guess, you know, it's the same crap with that if you're acting smart, you're being white.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who came up with that? Remember, Newsweek, I think, had a cover magazine story where they did a feature story on African Americans that were achieving academically and they're acting white, as if white people have a corner on intelligence, you know, and black people have a corner on crime. It's a way of not looking at the real issue. The real issue is everything we've discussed here for the last hour and 20 minutes. Yeah. It is the relationship that the community has with police and the police have with the community. And I don't care where you live. Yeah. So that's not the real the real issue. If you get a community where people can work and have a stake in our society, let me tell you, crime goes down.
Well, and that gets us to the issue of it's the community where people work full stop right there, because since basically the Reagan administration pushing free trade, and then during the Clinton administration, NAFTA, CAFTA, all this stuff, we've had, 60,000 factories leave the United States.
My father went from Mississippi to Flint, Michigan, worked in that Buick plant most of his life.
Yeah.
And he bought him a house in Mount Morris outside of Flint, had him a little boat where he went fishing on the weekends. He'd wake up, he had a deuce and a quarter. And that was his life, and he went to work every single day, and never once was he ever arrested for anything.
And now we've got 34 years of Reaganomics that's destroying that middle class.
Have you been to Flint lately?
I have, yeah.
You saw where the plant used to be, the Buick plant used to be?
I wasn't there, but uncle of mine died there recently.
You could land a commercial plane. You stand at one end of where that plant used to be in the middle of that city, and it's just a slab of cement where that plant does not exist anymore, and the neighborhood around it is decimated.
Right, right. And that's, you just take Amtrak from D.C. up to New York.
The biggest employer in Flint, Michigan is the university.
Yes, yeah. Remarkable. Joe Madison, it is always an honor and a pleasure to have
time
you on the program.
Yeah.
You got to go pick up your grandson. Joe Madison, be sure to check out Joe's
granddaughter.
Excuse me. JoeMadison.net is the website. Joe Madison, the Black Eagle, Sirius XM Urban View, weekdays, 6 to 10 a.m. on Sirius XM Channel 110. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And get over to JoeMadison.net and tell him I said hi. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So a couple of fundamental questions for all of us. Number one, Dr. Francis Collins, the head of the National Institutes of Health, says that a decade of budget cuts, as in Republican budget cuts, to his organization and others, have caused there not to be an Ebola vaccine. He said, otherwise we would have had it. Well, here's his exact quote. He said, and I quote, NIH has been working on Ebola vaccine since 2001. It's not like we suddenly woke up and thought, oh my gosh, we got to do something, have something ready here. Frankly, if we had not gone through our 10-year slide in research support, we probably would have had a vaccine in time for this that would have gone through clinical trials and would be ready. It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's really pretty amazing when you think of it. Number one. Number two, it is Columbus Day, legally, except in Seattle where it's Native American Day or Native Heritage. Indigenous Peoples Day. Thank you very much. Which makes a whole lot more sense. And the question that I would ask is, what's the difference between ISIS and Christopher Columbus? Serious question. Using terror techniques. I mean, when the natives didn't bring Columbus gold or young girls that he could sell, he would cut their hands off. If they talked back or they behaved badly, he'd cut their noses or their ears off. If he got really upset, he'd turn the dogs on them and have them torn apart right in front of him. He'd skewer them with pikes running a pole right through their body from one end to the other. This is what this guy did for fun. How is Christopher Columbus different from ISIS? ISIS claims that they're doing what they're doing in the name of religion. Columbus claimed that he was doing what he was doing in the name of religion. In fact, here's a quote from Christopher Columbus, 1503, a letter to the King and Queen of Spain, quote, "Gold is most excellent. Gold constitutes treasure, and he who has it does all he wants in the world and can even lift souls up to paradise." Yeah, we're going to go rob the new world so that we can help people get to paradise. Interesting. And then this police officer who threatens to put this couple's 2 weeks 2-week-old baby in protective services over a traffic stop. Really, what's going on in this country? What is going on? Chris in Darlington, South Carolina. Hey, Chris, what's up? Chris, you are on the air.
Sorry I missed Joe, but anyway, I had two comments to make. The first was on the, you know, as far as, it, you know, a lot of people seem to think this police brutality is a new idea. You know, listen back to songs like some of Chris talked from the 70s and Led Belly, whenever he was recording. I mean, it's not new. The way of playing about it is improved.
Yeah. Yeah, our phones are flaky or something's flaky here, Chris. I'm sorry you're breaking up pretty badly, but I get your point, and I'm with you. And this is the point that Joe and I were talking about a little earlier, is that, you know, thank God for video cameras that are built into people's phones. And, you know, he said, hands up, don't shoot. It should be hands up, hold camera, don't shoot. I think that's a pretty good one. Maurice in East Dublin, Georgia. Hey, Maurice, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon. How are you? And I'm sorry I missed Joe also. Happy Genocide Day, actually. Yeah.
There you go. That's a good one. What's up,
Mike? Yes. Well, a lot to talk about, so very little time. You need to have me on as a guest. I would love to come on, and I think I could contribute something of merit. First and foremost, don't discount the notion of requirements of body cameras being on every policeman in this country from this point forward. Okay. And I know that's something that state legislatures will have to do, but the federal government can actually allocate the money, and I think the DOJ is starting that process now.
It's a whole lot better than giving them tanks, you know?
Yes, it would be, but I think that that would go a significant amount of the way that would be required in order to mitigate much of what we've been seeing over the last few decades, actually.
My concern, Maurice, is that the police officers will simply figure out a way to turn off the camera when it's inconvenient for them to have it on.
Oh, no. What has happened in DeKalb County, Georgia, which has a majority black population and the police force is majority black, the cameras and most of the cameras in these departments that are using them now, they can't be altered and they can't be turned off. So unless there's some technical threshold that they can surmount.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But, you know, I'm just saying 2-3 years down the road, I have a feeling. Well, I hope I'm wrong. I'm being totally cynical here, and probably I shouldn't be. I should be hopeful.
Yes. Secondarily, when Joe mentioned education and the value of it here in America, something that he didn't mention, and I know that it's probably just because it wasn't relevant in his mind at a particular time, is that other countries do public education better than us.
Mm.
Now, at the university level, we are supreme. But at the primary and secondary level, many other countries, especially Finland, they do public education much better than we do.
Yeah, I said Denmark earlier. It was Finland. You're right. Maurice, thank you for the call. Very, very well said. Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, what's up?
Yeah, Tom, I'd like to change my topic a little bit. After watching you and Joe Madison, something occurred to me. That going back and remembering the meeting that Roger Ailes had with Nixon.
Right.
About setting up a network.
About GOP TV, right?
Yeah, GOP TV. Now, what occurred to me is that there's two very succinct wars going on here. One is to preserve the lily-white society and the rulership over it. The other is fighting for justice for all. And there are two different wars going on. Mm-hmm. And they're being fought differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why we're not going. The conservatives have to prove Barack Obama an ineffective leader.
Well, what they've done is they have, to some extent, made him one by obstructing or blocking everything and anything he tries to do. And this is, I think, one of the great crimes of the last 6 years. The caucus room conspiracy, I believe, was a criminal conspiracy and continues to play out. At least criminal, if not legally criminal, it's certainly morally and politically criminal. David in Spanaway, Washington. Hey, David, what's up? You want to talk about Obama being a Marxist?
No. No, what? Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. You were talking about Obama being a Marxist earlier.
Yeah, I had a caller who suggested that he was, and I was like, what? That's a new one on me. Apparently, I don't watch enough Fox News.
Yeah, anyway, it reminded me about this weekend. I watched a video, which I sent to you, about John Kennedy giving a speech. And the way he always started out was he'd tell a few jokes.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned the fact that Karl Marx was a foreign correspondent here in the U.S., and he wasn't he had a family, and he wasn't getting paid enough money for his writings to feed his family, so he asked for a $5 increase on his work, and they refused him. And so he quit, and he wrote the Marxist Papers, which is where communism came from, and how much does that cost us? How many trillions of dollars fighting communism over the decades does that cost?
That's an interesting story. I've not heard it before. I don't know if it's apocryphal or if it's true, but it's a fascinating one. David, thanks for calling and sharing that with us. James in Spring City, Tennessee. Hey, James, you wanted to change the way police are paid?
Yeah, and good afternoon, Mr. Hartman. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Great.
So, your
great.
Suggestion?
Well, I'm thinking perhaps we pay our civic officials there in direct proportion to our paychecks.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking about as individuals and not through a collection point like our local governments and through our Chamber of Commerce, but actually through our individual paychecks. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I'm not sure I understand what you're suggesting.
Well, I'm thinking playing two things with
I mean, we're out of our paychecks, we have everybody has deducted your payroll tax. I mean, even people who are making sub poverty levels, they're paying into Social Security and Medicare and that kind of thing. And then anybody who's making over a certain level is paying income tax on their income. Are you suggesting that we should do away with sales tax or property tax?
Yeah, I'm kind of like taking from directly from our paychecks, not through a taxation, but through proportion from our direct paycheck. And I'm not talking about just a county level, I'm talking about something at a level, say, a national level, right? But are we getting this across?
Yeah, I don't see what would that solve? What is, why do you want to do that?
Well, I think that as their paychecks would fluctuate depending on how we're paid, that it kind of helps our police department understand is how they treat us, how they also see our
Oh,
economy.
Do you mean the police departments should, or the pay of police should be a function of the pay of people in the community that they're serving?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, in a direct proportion of what our paychecks are.
Yeah, the problem with that is the problem you have in inner cities or in Appalachia, in poor areas that rely on property taxes, or even if they were to rely on a local income tax, although typically they don't, but that are relying on property taxes is that, poverty breeds poverty. James, thanks for the call. I mean, this is the whole point of the Department of Education is to try to equalize some of that stuff across the country.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The disparity between West Virginia and New York, for example. I mean, these are the reasons why we actually need a federal government. And welcome back, Cindy, in Euclid, Ohio. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hey, Cindy.
I was listening to your libertarian caller. Are you there?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, and I was thinking of the socialist maxim, the kind of reasonable one, what, to each according to their need, from each according to their ability. And I came up with a dictum for corrupt and predatory capitalism, which would be to each according to their greed and from each according to their gullibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would fit.
Jamie Dimon's slogan.
About your guest. I survived as a gay, white, Democrat, Yankee, vegetarian in love with a black woman and living with a black woman in 70s and 80s Texas.
Hmm.
And we were constantly being pulled over for things such as dirty license plates. And basically they assumed we were prostitutes. They'd say, you girls working? things like that. Even though both of us dressed conservatively, neither one of us wore makeup. It was just, it was constant. You know, there was a constant strange vibes that you get and subtle harassment. They weren't so bad as they were, of course, to the males.
Do you think that that would not have been the case if your partner had been white?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
They just assumed we were prostitutes because we were together.
Yeah. And because one of you was black.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing. Cindy, yeah, thank you for sharing your story. It's a that's a tough one. You wanted to respond to the libertarian callers, according to my notes here. Is that did you say what you wanted to say?
Right. Did you hear that? The basic answer to the socialist maxim of to each according to their need,
I got
from
it.
Each according,
according
to their
greed. There you go. Yeah, yeah. Jamie Dimon's, yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Cindy. I appreciate the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Michael in Imperial Beach, California. Hey, Michael, you want to talk about Columbus?
Yeah, hey, Mr. Hartman. On this Columbus Day, if Columbus did what he did back then, what we would do is we would send about 3 B-2 stealth bombers over there, drop 300, 500-pound bombs, and that's game over. What do you think? Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Well, that's my point, is I have not yet been able to figure out what the difference is between ISIS and Columbus. And I don't mean that to be provocative or, well, I guess I do mean it to be provocative, but I don't mean it to be hyperbolic or silly. It's a serious question. I mean, you've got a group of people who are motivated by wealth and power, who are engaging in terrorism and genocide. How was Columbus different from ISIS? Seems to me like there's a startling number of similarities. And it's something that I think, you know, frankly, that we should be talking about. We're not much. But, and I've not heard anybody else make this point. I mean, you know, we talk about, you know, indigenous people were, you know, there was a genocide, they were murdered, blah, blah, blah. And the white story, by and large, is, yeah, we brought some flu and it was a bad thing. And, you know. But no, it wasn't. Flu certainly killed an awful lot of natives, but in fact, probably the majority of them. But it wasn't just because white people were benevolent and accidentally stumbled over here with flu. What's the difference between Columbus and ISIS? We'll be right back. Ten minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you, fair and only slightly unbalanced. Benjamin in Madison, Mississippi. Hey, Benjamin. What's up?
How are you? Good. I just had a quick thought here. I listened today, first time on your show, about you talking about Columbus Day, and I assume you would be okay with doing away with Columbus Day. Is that correct?
Well, I'm not sure that we need to do away with it. I think that we need to look at it with a little more clearer eye. Why?
Okay. Well, because if you were, as a lot of people I think are, I'm just curious if you would feel that way, because right now I think there's only one other person that has a federal holiday. Is that correct?
Martin Luther King?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that Martin Luther King ever engaged in genocide or the child sex trade.
He didn't do that. He didn't do that. Absolutely not. But he did some other things that that are known, and I'm not trying to compare it, but I'm just going to say, if we're going to make something...
You just did compare the Benjamin.
No, I did not. I did not say he did that. But there are different levels. Obviously, there's...
No, Benjamin, thanks a lot. Good try. Good try. But, you know, we're not buying it. Sally in how do you say that city in...
Chihuahua,
Washington. Hey, Sally, what's up?
Yes, fine area of northeastern Washington.
Mm-hmm.
State. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I want to thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Tom, I've listened for many years, thanks to my sister, Sue, who has since crossed over. But as a Caucasian woman in this area, I'm pleased to share with you, we have a indigenous person, Joe Pakotis, running for the 5th Congressional District against Kathy McMorris Rogers.
Oh, she's the new friendly white female face of the Republican Party.
everywhere except Washington, in northeastern Washington. She had a debate with him in Walla Walla. Mm-hmm. Pathetic. She was pathetic. He is on top of it. He is the CEO of the Colville Federated Tribes and a fine man.
Any idea how the polling's going?
I have no idea. I don't think they even bother.
Uh-huh.
Truly,
yeah.
I do. Yeah. Anyway, I would like to invite all the voters from whatever party or race or being to tell all their friends that live in eastern Washington, from the Canadian border to the Oregon border, at Walla Walla, Spokane, you know, Colville, Northport, Republic, in Chileum. Anyway, to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he is both fiscally responsible. He also is a supporter of Move to Amend. He's also environmentally helped with the cleanup of the Columbia River.
That's great. Sally, thanks for the info on that, and hopefully your plug for him has gone far and wide and will do some good. Thank you for the call. Arthur in Marysville, Washington. Hey, Arthur, what's up?
Yes, let's change to Antonio Gramsci Day. Forget about Columbus. As an Italian-American, we can appreciate Antonio Gramsci.
Who was Antonio Gramsci?
Well, he was an Italian communist philosopher in which he spoke about hegemony and how the ruling class sets the table for everyone to think and allows some what can be discussed, et cetera, et cetera, culturally, politically, economically, spiritually.
Yeah.
He spoke about you have to change the way hegemony is it controls us.
Huh. Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. Arthur, thank you for the suggestion. Sandy in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Sandy, you wanted to talk about Joe's comment about, I think he was talking about he and I have literally traveled all over the world together, but a lot of people, presumably of both races, don't know anybody of the other race.
Yeah, the reason why I wanted to talk about it, because it's something I've always believed, too. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm listening.
I was born and raised on Army posts and during the 50s and the 60s. And so it was very diverse neighborhoods, totally integrated.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had parents who taught me not to judge people based on race or religion. And, you know, I had Asian neighbors, black neighbors, classmates, friends. And it wasn't until I moved off post, my dad retired, that I was around more white civilians. And I could see that, you know, they saw a young black man, and they saw a gangster, thug, criminal. I saw a young black man, and I'd see my neighbor, my girlfriend's brother, my classmate. So until you can start seeing so many, meet so many people and know so many people who don't fit the prejudices and don't fit the stereotype, suddenly you can't hold them anymore because you know too many people who don't fit them.
Right.
So you need to reach out and socialize and get to know people.
Well, and
that's what I would urge people to do.
I agree. And I think that, you know, everybody talks about the Cosby Show as being a consequential and turning point in American media. I look at American media now, and the thing, and in fact, last night Louise and I watched an episode of Scandal, which is a show that Louise really likes, and well, I do too, you know, which is about an African-American woman who's got this relationship going with a white president of the United States, and she's like a superwoman. I mean, she does all this incredible stuff. But what I think is even more consequential than, you know, interracial relationships and romances and everything else on shows like that is the fact that African Americans are popping up in TV ads that are not targeted to African American audiences, that are targeted to everybody. And as that happens more and more, what we're seeing is diversity in our media. And I think that that's a really healthy thing. Sandy, thank you for the call. Thank you. Very, very thoughtful comment. And thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow. The holidays will be over. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require you to show up. Get out there, get active, tag. your end. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.